Hey, what's going on? Greetings and good day, and welcome back to Birds All Day. My name is Drew Ferris, and yes, we are here talking about your Blue Jays of Toronto, the baseball team that may, in fact, play a baseball game sometime soon. May not play a baseball game sometime soon, or maybe they will. I don't know. But it feels like we're getting closer, if nothing else. That is until, of course, the actual the reason they're not playing in the first place shuts the whole thing down. Once they agree to the economic terms, suddenly the alarming second wave, even though the first wave never stopped, is going to hopefully not interrupt the progress, any progress that they may have made, I should say. And speaking of progress, there's no one more progressive that I know, and he joins me as always.
Old reliable. I'm sure that's not true.
No, that you're the most progressive person I know?
Yeah, I still have much to learn, but I'm happy to be here.
Who among us? Who among us doesn't have much to learn? I hope that everybody is still doing so. I said this last week, and I'm probably going to say it every week. I hope that we are taking the opportunities, again, that we are afforded, those of us who are lucky enough to be in a stable home, in a stable place, safe during the pandemic. If you're getting out and being able to be part of demonstrations and listening and learning and seeking out information, I hope that you're able to do that. I'm hoping you're able to, if you are still have a solid source of income, you're able to take some of that money and put it in a good place and help people and organizations that might need it. It's June. It's Pride Month, so there's lots of different organizations around the city, around the country. There's one I saw that was really interesting to me called the Okra Project. If you're in the U.S., actually, that's probably one that's more relevant to you. But if you have those opportunities, I hope you're willing to take them. But we do thank you for listening to what we have to say and for taking the time and hopefully investigating some stuff if it's new to you that maybe we've discussed on this show. Of course, this show is Birds All Day, and you can subscribe at anywhere you get podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Overcast. And of course, you can subscribe to The Athletic. If you go to theathletic.com/birdsallday, you can subscribe for a full year, 40% off. I cannot recommend it highly enough because it's a time where we're really seeing some, again, we've gone past the Remember Some Guys days. And again, there's some really exciting.
I take issue with that. I'm still remembering guys on a regular basis.
But you've gone down to the more granular level. You're not just remembering guys. You remember some guys' contracts or remembering sure some am guys' sure contract am perks, which is but there's a lot of cool stuff that's being discussed. One story that was on The Athletic that our friend and I wouldn't even say friend of the show. That's selling her short. Caitlin McGrath, she wrote about our guest this week, which is Mike Wilner, radio play-by-play voice of your Toronto Blue Jays on the Fan 590. Really excited to have Mike join, a guy who's been a supporter of ours for many years and a guy that we've been proud to support through many of those years as well. So we talked to Mike, but we're going to talk about baseball. I don't know, Stoughton. I think that it's important for us to be upfront and honest and negotiate everything we do through the media moving forward. It seems like it's the way that billionaires operate, to operate in bad faith and to just float things out through friendly media sources. So what do you think? Is this a good strategy for us moving forward? We don't really have anything to negotiate or talk about, but I think it's important to kind of, you know, pull whatever levers you got for whatever pathetic grasps at leverage that you have since lost. And you got outfoxed by Tony Clark, so that's a look, let me tell you. It's a look.
I don't know, man. I thought we had an agreement. This is not what I signed up for. This is the agreement. We hashed it out. It was there. What is, you're talking all sorts of different stuff. This is ridiculous.
We will talk about all those things. There was a lot of excitement because people definitely took things at face value and did not bother to dig down deep into what was being said because there's just so much. People want there to be baseball. And people are real tired. And even though I think that the owners are blowing it, no one would say otherwise. And then even though, as we've said many times, the players are not sympathetic figures, the players are, I think, maybe winning some people over to their side. The owners are at least the ones who are having, I don't know, capitulating, but looking as though they're the ones making concessions. Although, I don't know. The whole thing is up for debate. We can talk about that. We will talk about that, right?
I assume we will absolutely talk about
that. I think we'll talk about this. We'll talk about, I don't know, what else is there? I can't believe it's crazy to me that I'm so conditioned by the baseball draft is like a wealth. It's a criminal enterprise, but also so interesting because they just pick guys for days. But now it's like they got five guys, and I think they've got, what, four of them signed already? Three of them are already signed?
Three signed, and then they got a couple extra guys. I think three that I saw announced earlier in the week. I don't know if they've added to their total of the post-draft $20,000 bonus guys. But
just literally stealing from these kids, reaching into their pocket and taking money out. But it's all
like, I mean, they do that in Latin America, so why not here, you know?
You know, it's great. Baseball's great tradition. Baseball's grand history of tradition. But so we've got some other stuff to talk about. But before we do that, let you and I go and talk, as I mentioned before, with Mike Wilner, because we had a lovely chat. He's a lovely man. And so we'll talk to Mike. We'll come back. We'll talk about labor unrest, which is something that we love to talk about, and draft picks and remembering guys and contracts and all that stuff. And also we'll talk about so much more on this edition of Birds All Day. Are you looking for a Father's Day gift, missing baseball, or just trying to find that just perfect thing for the baseball fan in your life? How about a product that started from a company that began in a college baseball dugout, and that's where it got its name, Dugout Mugs. It's the barrel of a baseball bat turned into a 12-ounce mug. It's licensed by MLB. Your favorite team has been laser engraved into a Birchwood baseball bat barrel mug. Sounds awesome. Is awesome. It's perfect for the big game. Put it on the display. Be the life of the party. And maybe make it the player of the game mug for your softball team, your rec league team, whatever it is. Go to dugoutmugs.com/theathletic and use the promo code MLB30 for 30% off your first purchase. That's dugoutmugs.com/theathletic and code MLB30. Fill that baseball void with your very own Dugout Mug today. All right, as we mentioned before, it is our pleasure at this time to be joined by the radio play-by-play voice, one of two, for your Toronto Blue Jays, former host of Blue Jays Talk for many, many years, where he cut his teeth and earned the respect of millions who suffer no fools. It is our pleasure this time to be joined by Mr. Mike Wilner. Mike, thank you so much for taking the time.
My pleasure. A lovely intro. Thank you.
Well, this was a bit of a unifying factor. I'll be honest with you. I don't know if we've talked about this, where when I was first, exploring the internet and learning what people were writing about the Blue Jays, and I came across Stoughton writing about being like, man, talking about you, the guy who hosts Jays Talk, kind of not accepting garbage from people who call in with garbage opinions. I was like, hell yeah, I noticed that exact thing. I didn't even know what I was hearing. I'd just be, in my car, wherever, and hearing it. And I was like, yeah, that guy's got a lot to say that is correct. And then I was like, and so I guess it's Stoughton because he's stealing your ideas. And now here we are. So, but now you're in the play-by-play seat, and I, for one, couldn't be happier. I think you guys are doing a great job. You would be doing a great job today if there were games, but they're not. But so tell us real quick before we get started, how are you finding? How have you adjusted to A, life without baseball, but B, also, traveling with the team every day and doing the play-by-play? How have you you're having the time of your life, I can only assume.
I mean, when it started, it was sort of like an extension of the off season for me because I really, don't do anything in the off season.
Right.
I just kind of stay home and usually drive the kids around. But one of the kids moved out pre-pandemic, taking her gap year between high school and university, which was, as it turned out, a brilliantly planned thing to do. And then I wasn't driving the other one around or picking her up from school or anything like that. So, it's gotten a little weird. I guess 3 months in, it's bound to get a little weird where, every day sort of runs into the next one. And I've had times where I can't remember, did I do that today or was that yesterday that I did that? And I need to do it again or something like that. So that's been weird. I've been going out for a walk with my daughters every day. We're going to go when we finish podcasting. Often we've done it late at night. Sometimes you know, in the middle of the day, whatever. And I've been doing a lot, like a lot of simulation baseball that's kept me very, very busy. I'm running a daily Blue Jays simulation. I'm running a league of 28 people that I put together at the beginning of April with some celebrities and some comedians and some Second City people and some baseball writers just to give us something to do. And I thought maybe we would be able to publicize it and try to raise some money for COVID charities or some Black Lives Matter stuff. It hasn't really taken off that way, but it still might yet. And we're not quite sure how to do that, but mm-hmm. we're trying to figure it out. But that's been a blast. I've got my own simulation league that's going into its like 33rd season now. So that's keeping me busy. It feels like that's the thing I do more than anything else. But yeah, it's, I don't stop and think, man, it's weird that I'm not in Pittsburgh today or, mm-hmm. Wherever. There have a couple of times where I've said to my kids, hey, you guys would have come and met me in San Francisco this weekend, or we would have driven to Detroit this weekend or something like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when it's not there, it's not there. And when it comes back, and hopefully it does sooner than later, safely, we'll dive right back in and it'll be awesome. But it hasn't been a thing like where I think, oh man, I should be at a ballpark today. I know that when it's back, it'll just be that daily life again, but it doesn't seem to be a big hole right now.
It will be I can only imagine from the sounds of it, with no fans and probably not as much travel, it'll be a different thing than what you've done before, traveling to different ballparks and you know, having the crowd and playing off of that noise. I feel like it's almost going to be a combination of simulation baseball and real baseball, in that it's just sort of happening almost in a vacuum. What is your feeling then? Do you obviously are following the news and the reports and the negotiations through the media. Do you feel as though we're getting close? Do you feel hope? Do you feel more optimism maybe this week than the week prior? Or are you just kind of in very much wait and see mode at this point?
Definitely more optimistic now than, you know, say on Monday. I would say last Friday I was probably at about 100% there'll be baseball. On Monday I was about 25%, and now I'm at about 80-85%. I think that, you know, they're on the same planet now, and they weren't before. It's actually very analogous to American politics right now, where it feels like two sides are existing in two separate realities, and they can't even decide, you know, come to the decision of what's true and what isn't. And it felt like that's where Major League Baseball and the players were last week or early this week. But now it feels like they're speaking the same language. They're on the same planet. They have a basic framework, and you're not going to blow up a whole season because you can't figure out how to get how to find the middle ground between a 60 game season and a 70 game season.
So, assuming that they do, and assuming that they can safely, as you mentioned, go ahead with a season, what do you expect to see in such a short season? I mean, I can't help but wonder if, you know, this your experience with simulations and having this kind of baseball dungeon master vibe that you're putting out here on the show. But like, there's, you have these, when you're in a simulation, for example, if you have a player and you've got their skills and their attributes based on, you know, the previous year and whatever else, there are kind of like error bars, right? There's like a baseline of performance, and there's a potential, you know, 99th percentile, whatever. We might actually get to see that in real life in a way, because God only knows what can happen in 60 games. Who knows which team is going to have three or four different guys kind of get hot at the same time, or what great team might be felled by one slump and one injury that kind of coincide. I mean, it's going to be an absolute madhouse. So 60, 65, 66, 68 games, whatever it ends up being, it's going to be crazy. Are you kind of bracing yourself for that? I mean, maybe this is the Blue Jays' chance. Maybe all this young talent sort of coalesces at the right time, and off they go.
They could go 40-20, right? They could, or they could go 20-40. But you would think that the shorter a season is, the better a chance it gives to the upstart teams, to the surprise teams, because they won't have enough time to fall out of the race. That does mean you have to start well, because it also means you're not going to be able to overcome a poor start. But if 16 teams make the playoffs, then you know the bar's set low. You don't even have to have a winning record, I would imagine, to make it to the postseason. But I think, you know, other than for however long I've been covering baseball, 30-plus years, we've been saying it's a marathon, not a sprint. Now we're going to have to start saying it's a sprint, not a marathon. That's going to be a huge difference. But the only thing we know for sure is nobody's going to drive in 100 runs. But I'll bet you somebody hits 450. you know, and some team could possibly go like 43-17 over a 60-game season, and then get knocked out in the first round of the playoffs by a team that went 28-32. It's going to be absolutely crazy, and none of the things that help a team win over 162 games are going to matter. And you're right; one injury could completely derail a team. Where if you know, during a normal season, you lose a guy for 6 weeks. Well, you still got 20 weeks with him. But now you lose a guy for 6 weeks. You've only got him for five, and you could be kind of screwed. And add to that the fact that you would assume that they're not letting teams cheat anymore. things could really get evened up.
Now, does it redefine, you know, what a successful season is, say for a team like the Blue Jays? Because, you know, oh, if that, like, is it a failure of a season if they don't make the top 16 and get into the playoffs? Or do you think it's just such a crapshoot at this point that nobody can really have those thoughts about, you know, what was a successful or a failed season?
You know, I saw a quote from an unnamed general manager about something like that today. And he said, don't kid yourself. If we're terrible, we're going to pay for it. Our bosses aren't going to say, it was just 60 games and you never know what's going to happen. I think that there will be a group of people, the dispassionate ones who can remove themselves from the, oh my God, you suck. How did you go 23-37 when you were supposed to be a great team, and say, well, you know, anyone can do that over 60 games, and it really isn't a referendum on how good or bad a team you are. But the general consensus will be teams that are great in a short season are great. Teams that are terrible. And if a team, whoever wins the championship, which could be four or five best of sevens among who knows what, is going to be the greatest team in the league. Yeah, but I think in general, when anyone looks back on 2020, whether it's baseball, hockey, basketball, football, whatever, assuming that they all get played and finished, no one's going to be looking at the 2020 champions and say, you know, there's one of the top five great teams of all time. They only lost 16 games or something like that. We're all going to know what 2020 was and how bonkers a year this was. And that's all the asterisking we need, I think.
That I don't disagree. I think that for you in particular, I am for your sake, I am glad that you are not in the Blue Jays talk chair anymore, because 2020 will be like the post-analysis season, because it's not like, what does this mean for the future? You know, it's not what we're trying to see. Like, is Kevin Biggio an everyday player in the big leagues? Are we going to see, you know, be able to continue what he did in September and kind of tease that out over a season? You know, what's up with Bo Bichette? He's going to have ups and downs, you know, as he got a hot start. What's up with Vlad Guerrero? It's going to be like, well, that happened today. Who the hell knows what's going to happen tomorrow? Let's just tune in and find out. And I don't envy anyone who's going to have to try make, well, maybe that's kind of what we do, but having to make a hide in her hair of like what happened today, what happened tomorrow, big rosters, all kinds of weird and wild stuff. And then it's just going to kind of be over. I think it's just going to be like a, enjoy the ride. And if you're a team that's maybe not like an Orioles level disaster, it's, you're just hoping, like hoping against hope, that you can just string it together and get yourself somewhere. Because as you said, no one's going to look back and be like, that 2020 team is you know, was one of the greats of all time. But hey, the flags fly forever, and people don't. I don't think anybody. I mean, do people hold it against the Braves? Do people hold against whoever won the World Series in 81? The Yankees? No, not the Yankees. I don't remember who won in 81.
Dodgers.
The Dodgers. Okay, that's the last time.
As the Yankees. Yeah.
But I mean, I think that that's just sort of, yeah, like, let's just see what happens tomorrow, because none of this really means, not that none of this means anything, but to draw any great conclusions, I think it's just going to be like a big, long, maybe enjoyable shrug, 60 games of shrugging and being like, well, that was cool. Who knows what we're going to see next?
Yeah. And fun. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, I hope. But yeah, I mean, first of all, I was going to say, when people talk about 1981, I don't know that people talk about 1981. But if you look back, first of all, I don't think anybody sees that as a tainted World Series championship for the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
But also, remember, the team with the best record in the National League in 1981 didn't make the playoffs. So, you know, but nobody talks about that, and no one will talk about this. We just remember that there was a strike in 81. We'll remember that there was a global pandemic in 2020, and baseball didn't start till the end of July. But, you know, as far as drawing conclusions, you're 100% right. It was Billy Beane's famous quote was, you have 2 months to figure out what you've got, 2 months to fix it, and 2 months to win. That's your baseball season. And this season is, you've got 2 months.
Well, the Nationals were what, like 19-31 after,
yep,
after 50 games last year, and then won the World Series. So,
right. And where were the 2015 Blue Jays after 50 games?
Right.
I mean, they were pretty bad too.
I'm just really excited to
50 games is like it's the week before Victoria Day.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That said, what do you think you're going to see from a young Blue Jays team? What do you, maybe not think you're going to see slash hope to see,
hope,
expect to see from a 60 game season of such a young team that's really, you know, kind of got nothing to lose, you know, as much as any team in baseball does, but they have nothing to lose going into 2020. Like you said, it could be a lot of fun, and it could be just a really exciting run. I'd love to get you to extrapolate a little bit, maybe guess, maybe prognosticate. Put a number on it is what I'm telling you to do.
I mean, I hope that it's a team that's above 500.
Mm-hmm.
I expected that over the course of a full season. I think that, you know, with Hyunjin Ryu, if he gets hurt, it's a problem. But there's far less of a chance that he gets hurt when you're only asking him to make 12 starts. So, that, you know, if he stays healthy for them all season, that gives you a huge boost. With a short season that doesn't start until late July, there's no reason to believe that Nate Pearson won't be on the team the whole year. That gives you a huge boost, because it's going to be 4 or 5 starts until anyone catches up to him, you would think, as long as he can throw strikes. He was legit men against boys in spring training pretty much every time he took the ball. And if that's your 1-2, then you can compete with anybody. I don't expect that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is going to wear down in a 60-game season. Bo Bichette could hit 30 doubles. I think that Kevin Biggio is a lot more the guy he was in September than the guy he was in June, July, and August. I don't think he's that good, but I think that's a that's closer to what we're going to see out of him. I'm interested to see what Lourdes Gurriel Jr. brings to the table and that power potentially. He had 20 home runs in 82 games last year. So I think that sure there are flaws, and I don't expect that all of a sudden we're going to see regular competitive at-bats from Randall Grichuk and Teoscar Hernandez and Rowdy Tellez. But I do think there's a lot there with this team, and they should, again, it's 60 games, the Baltimore Orioles could make the playoffs. The Blue Jays should make the playoffs in a 16-team playoff. And again, we don't even know what the league structure is going to be, right? Mm-hmm. It could be the two East divisions together. The Blue Jays could be competing with the Phillies and the Nationals for a playoff spot, for all we know.
But we can all agree there will not be an asterisk on Nate Pearson's Cy Young.
12 starts and 65 innings. I somehow don't think it's going to happen. But he might not give up a run.
The one other thing, he might not give
up. I didn't see him give up a hit all spring.
Well, you can't give up any runs. You'd have to try real hard to give up runs without giving up hits. So you heard it here first. Nate Pearson, perfect. 27 ups, 27 ups, 27 down every time he goes out. The other thing I think will be interesting, again, talking about being post-analysis, is a team that is young and has prized depth. But if you're the Blue Jays front office, if you get close to the end of the season, is it like maybe we pull the trigger, maybe we make a transaction, maybe we get a little loosey goosey with some of our depth? Are we going to see the potential for a postseason berth sort of like throw the reins off? Are there going to be some big trades or anything like that, or is it more going to be like guys sitting around who are unemployed? Maybe they can give the team a shot in the arm if it's a DH, because they're going to be, well, maybe there'll be fewer DHs, but expanded rosters kind of just give that many more opportunities.
I don't feel like this is a loosey goosey front office. I think that they are they're in it for the long haul. They want this team to be great for a very, very long time, and I'll be floored if they make a move for and who knows when the trade deadline's gonna, will it be with like 10 games left in the season or something like that? Who knows? But I don't think they'll give up anything that they see as future value for let's try to kick something into an extra gear right now, as much fun as that will be. And with expanded rosters, I don't know how many productive guys are going to be kicking around out there either. I'm not saying necessarily that you're stuck with what you're stuck with. They're real good at making tweak moves, and they made a few in 2016, which was the last time this team was in a playoff race, obviously. But So I don't expect them to sit on their hands and do nothing, but I think that I will wager, in fact, that league-wide it will be seen as folly to try to make a deadline splash deal.
Which is to say that the true inefficiency will be given to those who venture. Those who get reckless will be paid off in full. Mike, thank you so much for taking the time. We don't want to take too much more of your time. Thank you for continuing to do the Blue Jays Sim 2020. If you haven't already, you should check it out on Twitter. Where can they find you on Twitter, Mr. Wilner, if they haven't already?
Find me on Twitter at Wilnerness590. You can follow the simulation with the hashtag Blue Jays Sim 2020.
Mike, we look forward to hearing you and Ben back in the booth as soon as there's baseball. Be well, and we'll talk again soon.
Me too. Always a pleasure coming on with you guys. And stay safe, stay healthy, wear a damn mask, and we'll talk to you soon.
I'm going to make it real simple for you. Smelling good is important. Hawthorne smells really good. In addition to smelling good, you want to smell right for you. So what I need you to do is take a quick 2-minute quiz, and Hawthorne tells you the two colognes that are best for you. One for work, one for play. Maybe it's not for you. Maybe it's Father's Day. Maybe it's a birthday gift. Maybe it's something for someone you love. Go on, put yourself in their mind. Take the quiz for them. You'll get those two colognes that are best for you. It's totally risk-free. You get free shipping and free returns. So what I need you to do is check out Hawthorne at hawthorne.co. That's Hawthorne with an E and .co, not .com. And use the promo code ATHLETIC to get 10% off your first purchase. That's hawthorne.co. And use our promo code ATHLETIC to get 10% off your first purchase. Hawthorne.co. All right, that was so nice to talk to Mike Wilner. As I mentioned, as he mentioned, of course, you can follow him on Twitter. You can hear him on the radio. He's on The Fan here in Toronto quite often. And when the Blue Jays play, you'll hear him. What I don't know that we exert any kind of power. And obviously, these decisions are made well above our heads by people who we don't work for. But I feel like we, I don't know, vocal. That, look. Mike Wilner, Ben Wagner, it's a good booth. I said, hey, when they were getting their reps and the Blue Jays were trying different, or the Rogers were trying people out, I was like, hey, that's a good booth. And they went with it. A little bit of faith in humanity, and faith in humanity restored. Could have been worse. Could have been worse. I think it's a great. It's a great tandem. It's a great pairing. It's so easy to just like grab an ex player and stick them in there, have them kind of regurgitate some musty old truisms and lament the state of the game or whatever these guys end up doing. There's not that. They have energy and they have enthusiasm. And Ben is a great, kind of very classical, Syracuse trained play-by-play guy. And Mike is, not to say that Mike is not doesn't have chops and isn't like an established broadcaster, but nobody knows more about the Blue Jays than Mike. And it's really makes for a nice pairing, in my opinion.
I agree. Full credit to you for pointing it out and the Rogers powers that be for listening to you.
I don't want to take too much credit. I'll take some.
Will you? Okay.
Take some credit. I'm sure that those people were they were balancing the different radio demographics and looking at what's going to be resonant with their audience. And they were like, look at that loudmouth who tweets about throwing the Ted Rogers statue in the lake. Let's listen to him. He knows what's going on.
It's possible they just have, they have ears. I mean, it was a good booth. It was very apparent. And there was some, wonderful, talented people who went through the that we heard, like you said, get their get auditions basically or whatever. But this was the booth that really felt natural, and I think a lot of people were kind of vocal about it. Mostly you, but yeah, I'm glad it has worked out, and it's a pleasure to listen to them, and I'm looking forward to not being able to now that if you could dial your mind back to several months ago. The whole MLB TV thing. So that overlay with the different audio is not going to be available for a lot of people this year.
So many ridiculous things happened in the offseason. I've completely forgot. People who are MLB TV subscribers, those who have unplugged from cable, will have watched exactly as many Blue Jays games now as they had been unless they sought other means, because I had forgotten that they were like, yeah, the Blue Jays aren't going to be on MLB TV anymore. We were talking about it off air. It seems like 1,000 years ago, like in my mind, his career has already ended and he's retired and is a baseball coach and doing something else. Reese McGuire got arrested in a Dollar Tree parking lot, and it feels like it happened in another lifetime. And it was like 5 months ago.
It is a little bit odd. It is a little bit odd.
Because we live in this very weird non-time where the only things to demarcate difference between day and night is what asinine thing has Rob Manfred said today. It seemed as though things were getting close to a deal, as we talked about with Mike. And then it definitely seems like right now, so the first it was the league said 60 games, and the players said 70 games, and then someone said dead in the water. And it feels as though maybe I'm wrong, that the owners are definitely trying to run out the clock a little bit to get as few games as they can. And with Mike, we talk about 60 is sort of the number. I think it might end up being more than that. 66 seems to be the one that people really like. It seems like it can work with the teams, with the structure of series and games and off days. Trevor Bauer, of all people, making sense, breaking it down on Twitter. I can't even bile at the tip of my tongue as I say those words, but
no doubt.
But like, so 66 or 68 games are the number that we end up with. What's the wait? What's the holdup? It's frustrating because it feels close. It feels tangible. And as Mike said, you know, it was 100, then it was 25. I don't know where it is now. It feels closer to 100, but also it's just like, well, why isn't it 100? Why aren't plans in place to get the season started before it all gets shut down?
Well, obviously they're taking the precautions about the pandemic, making sure everything can happen. No, I'm just kidding. It's obviously about fucking money. They don't clearly give a shit about, you know, the health and safety. They're just completely, as everybody is at this point, like putting their heads in the sand about the rapidly rising number of cases in states with not necessarily even just one team, like multiple teams. And I don't know how the restarted spring training is going to work. I don't know if they're going to send everybody back to Arizona and Florida. I think maybe not. They might work out at the facilities that they're in. That's all sort of to be decided, but that's not what they're bickering over. But, you know, we could talk about how short-sighted and absurd it sort of is. But I think obviously it seems like it's that money thing, and they're just running out the clock, and that's why we're where we are now. I mean, it seems like the owners are just obviously understand that, you know, playoff revenue is going to be big for them, and if they don't pay the players during the playoffs, so the less regular season there is, the better it is for them. So here we are. And that's what's so frustrating, and it has been for all the weeks that we've been talking about this, but just to watch people not get that on both sides, and you know, the players' union isn't perfect, and isn't like everything they do isn't unassailable. You know, help out the minor leaguers, for example, but in this situation, it's obvious what's going on. It's just obvious. It's obvious, and it's absurd that the league doesn't want to play baseball. The baseball owners are like, no, we would prefer there not be baseball. And, you know, to which I can only say, sell your damn team then.
Sell your damn team. I think that's, that seems likely enough. I full credit to the players whose whole, like, tell us when, brilliant, like a brilliant, PR yeah. messaging strategy. Definitely put the kind of the other side in this kind of squabble on his heels a little bit, because it's really just that simple. Tell us where and when. Let's go. Let's play as many games as we can. And they're like, man, let's play some fewer games. But I don't know. I just wish that they could get out of their own, not get out of their own way. I think they need to sort these issues out. And I saw Andy McCullough of The Athletic wrote about it this week, being like, if you think this is bad, wait till the next winter, wait till the winter of 2021. And I mean, this is going to be a rough winter for free agency, with like the, everyone's going to be crying poor, turning their pockets inside out, other than of course the Toronto Blue Jays, who are going to rise from the ashes and win the World Series after like a 31-29 regular season record. But this does not bode well for the next little while in terms of labor unrest in baseball, which is something we've said, but again, they, you know, while Mike said, oh, they're at least on the same planet now, I don't know. It still seems like they might begrudgingly get something done, only to then further dig their heels in, you know, in the next negotiation, having felt as though they were taken to the cleaners. If you're maybe the owners, or if one side feels they end up taking a bad deal now, maybe they're less inclined to take another bad deal the next time around. I don't know.
Yeah. And what I also think is that, you know, some of the things that are going to get enshrined here are going to be real tough to dial back, right? Like the expanded playoffs. I mean, that's just more money for owners. That's more markets involved. That's a plus for the owners. Like, they don't give a shit about the sanctity of the schedule. They don't care about watering it down. Obviously they're not baseball fans. They're people who are trying to make money off baseball. And that's, you know, that's something that, you know, when it's going to be 2 years of expanded playoffs by the sounds of it, that's sort of the framework that we've heard, you know, at the current moment. I doubt that's going to change. And And that's something that people are afraid of, and they kind of say, oh, it's only 2 years, but how are you going to get them to dial that back? You're going to need to now concede a lot, I think, if you're the players, to not have these expanded playoffs, because the owners are going to be like, look, this helped our bottom line. Like, I don't see that going anywhere. Maybe not 16 teams, hopefully not 16 teams, because it's absurd, but, you know, over 162 games, but It's stuff like that that I think is kind of interesting in what we're seeing this week and in where these negotiations are going to go in the future, like the DH as well. I mean, it's sort of just like a soft opening of the DH. You know, they're going to do it for a little bit, but it's probably never going to come back. And I think that's because when they're negotiating the next CBA, it won't be as radical and it will just be something that they don't have, that nobody has to concede. You know, it's the negotiation is going to be about, okay, I'm giving up this, you're giving up that. And I think some of these things are just going to pass into existing as part of the game. And that's sort of, I think, getting overlooked a bit, because I think that's something we should think about before they go ahead and just like slap down an agreement and be like, all right, here we go.
I agree 100%. There's going to be definitely a lot of stuff that's not going to go back to the old ways. The DH might be the one. Again, maybe the DH is the sort of litmus test. So I am happy, though, that we now have the opportunity to fight about the DH. Because last time we talked about this, I got a DM from someone who's, let's call her Sarah F. No, that's too obvious. S. Findlay sent me a message and said, I want to go back in time and play like 2011 or 2012, Drew, the clip of you now, me now, kind of saying that pitchers in fact should hit, which is kind of still how I feel.
You're not allowed to have personal growth? Come on.
Well, I mean, because I'm on a very precarious limb here making this semi-serious point, but here's my thing. About the DH, I get why they would do it in the shortened season, sort of. Maybe there's a way to find a fun way to. Somebody on my on Twitter said something about pitchers have to hit in DH or in interleague games, no matter which ballpark it's in. Make that just like a weird quirk of interleague, which is like, sure, whatever. I'm all for it. I'm all for gimmicks. I'm all for, because on a normal baseball season, the 2020 baseball season, should it happen or when it happens, will be very different. But 2021 will not. 2021 will be another baseball season. And 2021 will be a baseball season full of openers and full of, 40-man pitching staffs. And I was giving the Rays a hard time for using 33 or 39 pitches. But so as it, Blue Jays used 39 pitchers last year. It's just a revolving door of faceless weirdos, one after another. And especially when the team isn't good, it all kind of blends in. Right. So when it's the dog days of August and your team is, five games under 500 or five games over, the things you remember are the things that are noteworthy. And while an average pitcher at bat is bad and like below average for entertainment value, when the one wild thing happens, when the, not just the Bartolo Colon home run, but like when on opening day, when Madison Bumgarner hits two home runs, that's the shit that you remember. Maybe not forever, but for a really long fucking time. You remember that a lot more than you remember the odd, I don't even know, like who was the Blue Jays DH most of the time last year? I can't even think of who. Yeah, but all the one time that Rowdy Tellez hit, or if it's Rowdy or whoever else, like that stuff is the stuff that sticks to you. Those are the moments that kind of spike and they stay with you. And even though on average or on balance, it's probably a negative. For me, those high heights and those fun, weird things, like when Bumgarner hit a home run off of Clayton Kershaw, or when Clayton Kershaw hit a home run off of Bumgarner, or when Vince Velasquez is playing left field for the Phillies and throwing guys out of the plate and making diving catches because it's the mid late in the game and they don't have that same flexibility and they had to make shifts and changes here. It's not about strategy. I 100% agree that the strategy argument is so asinine. It's about fun and it's about memorable moments, and that Vince Velasquez thing I'll remember for a really long time. Even Roy Oswalt, that one time when Roy Oswalt played the outfield and made a catch and sat there with a stupid grin on his face, middle of the night, late game, whatever they talk about, weird baseball. Amazing. I remember that stuff I'll remember that for way longer than I'll remember an extra 100 and, extra 80 at bats that Rowdy Tellez gets or whoever is kind of cycling through, because I really truly do believe that the days of the the days of the David Ortizes and the, you know, the even Frank Thomases, or, you know, these kind of guys who are the designated hitter, those days are gone. So all you're getting is like another kind of faceless pre-arb guy grinding it out. Maybe we can see what we got. Maybe we can give, if we give Kevin Biggio an extra 50 at bats this year, it's going to make a real difference. I don't care. I don't. So let me see something fun. And obviously the Bartolo Colon thing is like peak fun. The crazy, one of the dumbest things that's ever happened in the history of the game. But the video that everyone has seen a million times if you watch MLB TV, and the dugout is completely losing their minds. And to me, there's value in that. So that's my DH, not anti-DH. Obviously, it's been around for 50 years. It's not like it's some kind of newfangled gimmick. This is not news. But that's my, sometimes it's fun to let pitchers hit. Sometimes it's fun to allow your entertainment to be fun. So that's my piece. And I've said it probably more than once now, but I stand by it. Sort of, as much as you can.
No, I think you should stand by it. I don't know. Sure, go for it. It's like, I don't know. Everything is arbitrary. Everything you could be like, oh, we could do this differently and perhaps better. I don't know. I know what you mean, what you're saying with like with the fun aspect of it. And yeah, the argument about, you know, just pitchers not being successful as hitters, while true. Yeah, I don't know, but you could change a million rules to like, for the sake of changing them. It's not like we're trying to move baseball towards being like a perfect game. It's like, it's got quirks, and sure, embrace those quirks rather than just make them into more automatons than they already are, which is quite high a level already.
It is. So baseball is so unique in the schedule. And again, this kind of comes back to what we talked about. Baseball is 162 games, which is an unfathomable amount of sports in 1 year for one group of dudes to play. So it is just such a different, atmosphere, such a different, the stakes are somehow higher and lower. And it's not like, you know, an NFL game where, you know, we've talked about this before, like where if it's the Memorial Day in the U.S. is like the third quarter of the first week in an NFL season, in terms of, that's probably not accurate, but you know what I mean? Like if you want to compare dollars to dollars, or try to make it a more apt comparison. So it's just that grind and that like every day and that autonomy and the number of times I've read the guys talk about, well, baseball players are creatures of habit. Like nobody has, that's the most cliched statement and the most trite statement, but it is just a different beast, right? In terms of what it takes to be a big leaguer and what it takes to play through the season and to grind. It's so stupid in some ways when we describe the grind. We had Ricky Romero on, and something I talked about him before in the past, who was like the grind of a season. It's like, we're playing sports. We're watching sports on TV. And these guys are like, fuck, I don't want to do this. God damn it. And like, this is like this weird internal, this weird dynamic where sports are so funny in that, because sometimes you watch it and you actively hate it. You're like, I can't believe I'm watching this stupid team again. Why? And then when Bartolo Colon hits a home run or who was it? Was it Estrada or somebody, like they steal a base, or someone does something weird and wild and gimmicky, you remember it. And it sure as hell beats watching people get murdered by the police on your fucking phone all day long. So in terms of just, it's a nice reprieve from that. So maybe the grinding efficiency and next thing you know, of having something weird and unfuzzy and kind of not perfect, maybe it's nice. Maybe it's not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, it's not a, you know, like I'm thinking like a basketball, and it's like, well, that is a sport that doesn't have as much weird in it, I would say. And what is there to, I mean, there's obviously, you go down to the granular level and look at like the way that the defense is played, or where there's little things I'm sure that you could call weird at various sides, but baseball, it's just, it's right out there. And the not just the pitchers hitting, but all, you know, just the whole concept of it, frankly. And the ballparks having different angles and dimensions and yeah, I get where you're going with that. And I don't know. You could make a designated hitter version of anything. Like, oh, you know, the these kickers can't hit a field goal over 50 yards. So, like, well, you can run it in or something. I,
what if when you give up a safety, it's worth 1 point and you call it a rouge? But yeah,
I like that idea.
There's just baseball is baseball, and it's not like anything else in that way. So hopefully they can keep some of those kind of those roughly drawn corners or those sort of edges of weirdness, and I don't know. But the 60 game season, that much I know, will be wild, and it has the potential to be crazy. There's so much randomness.
Oh, there's no way it won't, right? I mean, you can't look at the top, you know, the best teams on talent and be like, that's going to be the play, because it's 60 games. It's, you know.
Well, and how many like truly awful teams are there right now? Or if this was a normal February or March and the season was looking to start in another month, I can't even remember which was it, but if it's like, okay, the Orioles are terrible, maybe mm-hmm. Kansas City, maybe yeah. Seattle, a couple teams that are like bad, but. And then, okay, sure, Houston's really good and the Yankees are really good and Cleveland's supposed to be pretty good and maybe the Tigers are bad. But, like, everything else in the middle, that's just, like, gooey softness. It could go anywhere.
There's a lot of middle.
There's a lot of middle. And as baseball has been increasingly structured with you know, people punting versus moving all in and teams just kind of rolling the dice and hoping that, well, if our core comes along, then we can pull in the right complementary pieces or we can do a thing. Like, God, who knows? Who knows? And like we talked about with the at the risk of sounding like a goofy cheerleader, but like there's that why not us aspect. And if you're the Blue Jays and you're running Hyunjin Ryu out there and who's, you know, left-handed and maybe not the hardest thrower, throwing that fading changeup that just flummoxes people. And then the next thing you know, you got this kid that comes in, throws 103. And you're sending those two on, and you're playing all these three-game series that are like everything matters. And then next thing you know, you're winning two. If you're winning two out of three out of every series, you're doing pretty good. That's a pretty good
team. Two out of three World Series. I think that's fair. That's a fair expectation. But
if they go, especially if those guys get to start two out of three games every time, like if they're just Blue Jays start running a three-man rotation up there, truly revolutionary. But
I like the idea of just randomizing the number of games. Every year, like you do, like the Champions League draw style, and you get the balls and fucking, you know, David Beckham is there whisking his hand around a glass bowl, like, and then it's like, oh, you know, because you don't want teams to be able to plan for the number of games, because then they'll be good, then there'll be good teams and bad teams, and they'll like do it well.
No, see, I think.
But if you just throw them a curveball to pardon the pun, you know, just pull it out of a hat every year. Like, oh, this season's going to be 24 games.
Two things. Number one, David Beckham owns mm-hmm. the, I think it's, is it called Miami FC, the MLS team that I guess started to.
Something like that.
Their uniforms are like the best things I've ever seen in my entire life. They are incredible. I love every single bit about them. They're pink. They're white and they're black.
Pretty good.
Unstoppable. But here's my proposal, kind of pivoting off of what you said. World Series mm-hmm. ends. Everyone celebrate. Commissioner there. Here's a trophy. Way to go. Week later, typically, it's you know, free agency starts. So kind of capitalize on that, the free agency thing that hockey has, right? Where like the Canada Day, whenever it is that everyone, everyone from TSN shows up and they sit there all day long, whatever it is. The day that free agency opens, Rob Manfred or someone else solemnly walks up to a stage, like you said, whisks the hand in the bowl, pulls out a ball. It's got a number on it. That's a number of games they play that following season. So plan accordingly. Okay. Oh, ooh, we got a 200-game season. The season starts in 8 weeks. Better get moving. Oh, it's only 100 games. So then it's just scrambling and madness. Because don't forget something you and I know well, and that is the only thing people like more than baseball is transactions. So whatever is going to increase the number of transactions and increase the opportunity for somebody to make a transaction, oh, the fans love a good transaction. Boy, oh, and boy.
And yet, like, none of this is like written in stone and brought down from the mountain. Like how, you know, I don't know, we're making up the rules of baseball as we go along, like anything else. Like there's nothing immutable about the sacred nature of the baseball schedule. Let's go wild.
Let's go wild. Let's hope that, you know, the kind of Oakley sunglass guy with the goatee taking a picture of from the driver's seat of his car, who's like, billionaires versus millionaires, they're losing baseball, they better just get out of their way and play. I hope that they are that loosey-goosey with the traditions when we're like, yep, 200-game season and no DH is allowed. 105-game season and you're not allowed to have a center fielder. Fuck you, here we go. Like that, I cannot get enough. Let's go buck wild with it. Speaking of transactions, We don't know where Hyunjin Ryu. I mean, this is what they call in the game of transition. We don't know where Hyunjin Ryu is going to rank as one of the best or worst Blue Jays free agent signings of all time. But there is a lot to live up to if Hyunjin Ryu wants to finish ahead of the person. Say, if I was a writer for The Athletic, my name is Andrew Stoughton. I was going to do a bit of a ranking with some systematic elements to it. What's Hyunjin Ryu got to do to top the number one guy on your list, which I know that you put there begrudgingly, but...
I did. I there was a math error early on because I didn't know how to divide 20 by 4. Mm. So he wasn't even there. He wasn't even at the top at first before a reader kindly pointed out that I had made a grade school level error. I just used some arbitrary... I looked at wins above replacement per contract year. Thought that was an interesting way to sort it. Didn't want to do it by money. I don't want to get into the this guy's overpaid kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, get paid. You're a free agent. Get your damn money. Mm-hmm. We're not gonna judge you for that here in my little corner of The Athletic. But so I just sort of, you know, looked at it turns out, based on WAR per year of contract signed, Ryu doesn't really have to do that great to end up on that list. I mean, A.G. Burnett was on that list. If you, as I did, consider his contract a three-year one, because with the opt-out, it really was. And I know everybody really did not care for the fact that he opted out. But the reason that he was able to do that was the Blue Jays let him. Like, that was in the contract.
It's funny to me because, A, I don't know if new is how I would describe that opt-out, but it wasn't something that maybe Blue Jays fans were especially accustomed to, because they weren't a team that signed a great deal of free agents in that kind of period, other than, of course, Roger Clemens under a cloud Roger Clemens under a cloud because he was shitty and then all of a sudden he was awesome. But it just wasn't the sort of thing that wasn't as accepted and wasn't as well utilized then as it is now, which I don't even know. Do you think those opt-outs are a player-friendly thing? Are they a club-friendly thing? Or is it just sort of like a thing that people have sort of maybe normalized in the baseball world?
I don't know. I think generally they're player-friendly. But again, we're getting – like because, you know, if you're – If it's worth it to you to opt out, then you opt out and you get more money. Mm-hmm. If it's not, then you continue on as Vernon Wells, making all the money that you do. Because I believe he had an opt out in his deal. I don't know. I'm not going to lie to you. When you said transitioned to transactions, I thought we were going to talk about Raditella sending a bank transfer to his landlord. But
did he send a bank transfer to his landlord?
I don't think that he did either. No, that's what I've heard.
I'm glad that we were able to find a less sympathetic figure than baseball owners and millionaire baseball players, you know, in quotes, and that is Toronto landlords. By far the villainest of all villains. If we're looking for somebody to punch up and down at the same time, we found them. But I will take issue with one thing, and I don't know if you addressed this. I haven't read it as closely as I should yet.
We get it.
I'm a busy guy. Fine. What the fuck?
Saw some names.
Why is Russell Martin's name not on this list? I think is a question that's worth asking.
I believe I did address it. I believe I did say, I forget the specific words, but you know, on a real list of the best Blue Jays free agent signings, he certainly would be there. But if you consider the fact that it was a 5-year deal, one of them he didn't play because he was in Los Angeles, and two more of them he might as well have not played. He played fucking video games in the clubhouse. You know, that just cuts the average down. Mm-hmm. But obviously, hugely important, and no list worth its salt would be absent his name. Hence, the list isn't, you know, great. I'm not out here trying to build the perfect list of like the Blue Jays' greatest free. I'm not trying to do a scientific experiment. I'm just trying to find a creative way to like remember some guys. You know, that's the where.
No, but I
look where we are. Read the room.
I think it is important that there are kind of these things do not just happen in a vacuum, and that there are sort of parallel tracks in which we can track these things and how you seek that sort of kind of efficiency, or if you're a baseball team and you have limited resources, you're hoping to get a return on those resources, and your list from a practical standpoint does exactly that. It says these are the guys that offered a good return in terms of what they produced on the field, which is what they're being paid for. Russell Martin's contract, I think, because I'm a hopeless stan and I'm looking for ways to kind of like talk myself into it, where not only is, you know, maybe there are, you could take issue with the way that wins above replacement is calculated for catchers in particular, maybe because the replacement value of catchers is so high or low, mm-hmm. in that because catchers are shitty. So many catchers are so bad. And to address that hole in your lineup with a player who, especially in the first two and to a lesser extent 3 years of his deal, was such a well-rounded player as an exemplary defensive player. I'm not even talking about the, you know, pitch calling and the stuff that maybe the softer off the field leadership kind of workman like professionalism side. Just the nuts and bolts of what he does behind the plate, the ability that he did to extend the lineup, to turn in good at bats, to hit for power, to be the right fit for that team without getting too squishy about it. I really think I'm not intangibles, but those other contextual attributes would, in not outside of your list, which is not, you're not trying to make the perfect list. I think it would
assure you, I'm not trying to make the
perfect move him list, higher, yeah. Obviously, and maybe that's just sentiment, and you could probably potentially make a similar case for Paul Molitor, for example, which and Molitor's on here because Molitor hit the living piss out of the baseball for every minute he was in a Blue Jays uniform. So,
his third year wasn't as hot, but
he was old. But he was a great, great player who did great things. And also Winfield, right? Winfield was a four win year, right? A four win guy,
yeah. And actually, I thought about this. it was 4.1 per baseball reference. I thought about this because when you were talking about the way the DH works now, I went to the FanGraphs because the FanGraphs, as I call them, because their leaderboards are easier, mm-hmm. to deal with, and looked at the DHs of 1992. And sort of them by war, because I was just like, wow, like he's a four win guy as a DH. That's mm-hmm. crazy. And then there was like five of them. And like, as you mentioned, the way that the DH position has changed, there were like 12 guys who qualified for the batting title as DHs. Like it was not like, I think if you look at the 2019 leaders at DH and don't unclick qualified for the batting title or whatever it is, there's not a lot of guys there because they're just rotating guys, you know. But back then it was just there are defined designated hitters playing all the time. And that was interesting. And you know, you have, I think, put way more thought into this list than I did. Like in terms of like what I was trying to do and what I felt good about was like, yes, remembering some guys, but like just looking at like going into the newspaper archives and seeing that interview with Jim Proudfoot, where what sort of got synthesized from it was Winfield wants noise and what he was saying and how he was saying mm-hmm. it. And I had a conversation with someone on Twitter today about it. And they were just like, he was kind of saying, I forget who that person was. And I should quote because I'm about to say what they told me and not fully attributing to them. But they're like, yeah, 11-year-old me didn't get it. But he was basically saying, yeah, the fans, you're kind of bad. But he was saying it in such a like – a precise and a perfect way that like nobody could get mad at him. And it would just, you know, and it just, his words were just so fucking awesome. And, you know, it, the way that that became a rallying cry and you know, that, you know, that's sort of the emotional resonance is what I was sort of looking for. Not, not, you know, pushing up your glasses and telling me that fucking Russell Martin should be on the list. I know Russell Martin. If I wanted to make it subjective, I could do that.
I also think that Dave Winfield, in addition to obviously having a great season as a, I believe he was he 40 years old at that time as well. He was also such a versatile athlete. Dave Winfield, famous for being drafted into baseball and the NFL and the NBA all at the same time on his way out of high school. And he chose high school, I think, and chose baseball, drafted with the Padres. I believe he is also a product. No, he was not a product of San Diego. But anyway, he was also such a great athlete that with the fucking World Series on the line, you could leave a 40-year-old man playing right field with your regular right fielder playing first base and your regular first baseman, a 6'5" you know, kid with a vacuum for a glove, sitting on the fucking bench. Sorry, I'll never get over that. I'll never.
It worked out okay. Another thing, I know it's a, that felt like a good time to wrap it up, but I'm going to push on very briefly. But just, you mentioned Molitor, and it reminded me that in my travails, or travels, if you will, through the through the newspaper archives, I did come across a Marty York piece from early '93. That was, he'd spoken to George Bell. George Bell wanted to come back to the Blue Jays, Marty York said. And the piece was basically, Paul Molitor is bland and doesn't do the things that you need a DH to do. He's not a power-hitting, baseball-slugging guy. George Bell should come back, and Paul Molitor, what are the Jays doing? And it was just like, oh, oh, chef's kiss, Marty York. Just getting in there early. Just to, like, whatever the fuck happened to that guy. Just you see it setting in real early there. I really loved it, and like that. There's, because, you know, because York comes up a lot. I use the archives that are off the Toronto Public Library. So there's a lot of the Globe and the Star are in there. I don't see a lot of Sun stuff, so it works out beautifully. But you know, he like, you know, was a real baseball guy. I don't know if, you know, most people who are listening probably old like us, or, you know, remember the days of, you know, when the end of his sort of having a bigger platform, where it was just bizarre sort of rantings, and just the Jays could never do right by him. A very, very interesting character, who I don't want to get into too much about, really, but just ready with a fire hose of piss anytime the Blue Jays came up, and just to see him championing George Bell in like 1993 over Paul Molitor, magnificent.
The 1993 Blue Jays, who of course, the second best offense as a team in club history, who also have scored the fifth most runs in club history, despite obviously the offensive environment changing so dramatically from 93 into, you know, 2000 and 99, where nothing mattered, nothing was real. And of course, the 2015 Blue Jays, which were an unassailable juggernaut. It's a shame they didn't play the World Series that year, because I really think the Blue Jays had a good shot to take it.
Yeah, I think they would have won it. Yeah.
You would have been a fool to bet against them in 2015, but unfortunately nobody had the opportunity, because they did not, in fact, play the World Series in 2015. I think that's about enough. I think we've said enough. I think we've done enough. My hope is the next time we do one of these, we'll be able to, I don't know, parse the minutia of a deal between the players and the owners for the 2020 season, which will be set to go by the next time that we do one after that. I don't know. Yeah, 1 week spring training. Sounds good. That's why they put me in charge.
Well, they're gonna have to shut it down because the COVID case load is spiking in Florida and Arizona.
Let us not think about that. Let us not. They should play. I don't know where they could play it. There's nowhere. Oh, it's grim. His name is Andrew Stoughton.
Peterborough's doing good. Come on, play Peterborough.
There you go.
East City Bowl. Let's go.
They'll have like a line, like an electric shock fence around it to keep people away as they're playing big league ball in Peterborough. His name is Andrew Stoughton. He's in Peterborough. My name is Drew Fairservice. I'm actually in Orangeville. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you next week on Birds All Day.